Welcome to Mindset for Medical Moms. I'm your host, Courtney Given, fellow medical mom and life coach. I'm here to help you handle everything from doctor's appointments to surgery so you can feel confidence and peace as you navigate the ups and downs of medical motherhood. This podcast will share strategies and real life tools to strengthen your mindset and increase your emotional resilience. I'm so glad you're here. Let's go. Hello, beautiful medical moms. Welcome back to the podcast. I am so grateful that you are here. I have an exciting update. I finally have launched my website. I built this thing myself. I didn't code it, but I did design it and have to learn a lot of the technical aspects on how to make it look the way I wanted and set up an email system and do all these behind the scenes things that I would say don't come naturally to me. There were many times where I was like, okay, this is way too much, but I kept persevering and I finally did it. And it's live on CourtneyGiven.com. Very simple. My name is without a U. So there's no U, CORTNEY, Given, GIV as in Victor, EN.com. And you can go take a look. It's not fully finished. I'm going to have some more resources coming up in the next few months for you all. But I do have a free resource right now that you can grab. I'm going to link it in the show notes. It is a podcast guide. So with over 80 episodes on the podcast, I know that it can be a little bit overwhelming to be like, where the heck do I start with all these episodes? And depending on where you're at in your journey, maybe you want to build confidence. Maybe you have some emotions you want to figure out what to do with. Maybe you're preparing for a hospital stay. Maybe you are just diagnosed. I have topic categories for all of those things. Plus, I have one for my favorites on the podcast. And each category has 5 episodes that will help you with that specific topic. So for processing your emotions, there are 5 episodes linked directly in the resource where all you have to do is tap. It will take you directly to the episode and you can listen to those 5 episodes and you get a deep dive in this topic. And it's like taking a free mini course on all of these things. I highly recommend you go download it. And if you're new to the podcast, it will help you organize the information as well as give you a glimpse into what's available for you. Like I said, I'll link it in the show notes below. It's totally free. And once you download that or sign up for it, you will be added to my email list, which is important because I'm going to be adding more and more things to my website. One of the biggest things I'm going to start doing is adding workshops on there that you guys can download and get 90-minute workshops where I'm going to hold classes and teach you guys things. I used to do this live more frequently, but with the time zones and how busy life can get, I figured I'm going to do pre-recorded versions and be able to do it that way. So that's coming up in the next few months. And I'm also going to be starting a blog. Yes, a blog. Blast from the past. I know there are still blogs out there, but I used to be like an avid blog reader. And there were lots of mommy bloggers that I grew up like in high school watching unfold and become like the OG influencers. But I've been feeling like a pull, an internal tug to do more long form writing again. And I want to explore that creative outlet and talk more about motherhood and medical motherhood and life and tips and tools and all the things over there. So I'm thinking about doing like a monthly blog post as well as adding lots of other resources. And I'm going to be starting to transcribe my podcast. So I will be linking those as well in the blog. And you can go back and reference quotes or things I've said or tools and tips and concepts I've explained. And that way you can have that as a resource as well. So go download the guide, get added to my email newsletter, and stay tuned for all the amazing things coming up. Today, we're going to be discussing what it actually means to manage your brain and why it's helpful. I use this phrase often on the podcast, and I wanted to break it down so that when you hear it, you have specific examples that can come to mind so you understand what it means. I think I've heard other life coaches use this phrase, and I don't think I understood quite what it meant until I started actively practicing the tools, and I was like managing my brain. And as a life coach, my job, what I tell people I do, is show my clients their brains. Just like a coach points out, like a athletic coach points out to a player on the field. The player on the field knows what they're doing, right? They're running, they're catching a ball, they're throwing a ball. And yet the coach on the outside has a completely different perspective. They can see things differently than the person who is in the game. And that's why every successful athlete and every athlete ever really has some kind of coach, has someone to give them feedback, to give them pointers and tips, say, hey, this is what you're doing really well, and this is how you can tweak this one thing to help you do this part even better. And so when I think about my job as a life coach, I get to do that, but for my clients' brains. And it is the best thing because I just get to show them what they're already doing or thinking in a different way. And when, so what this means is if you were to come to me, I help you see and differentiate between thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. At the very bones of it all is thinking, feeling, and doing, right? We want to make sure we know what we're thinking, how we're feeling, and what we are reacting to when we think and feel something. And so, for example, you might come to me and share with me something that just feels like a fact. Because sometimes when you're the client, you get the thoughts, feelings, and reactions a little bit mixed up. You see them as inevitable, you see them as objective, you see them as set in stone, or you just may not even be aware that this is something that you're thinking until we dig a little bit at it. So you might come to me and say, I am not a very organized person. And I can say this about myself. So I understand what it's like to feel this way. Anytime someone leads, and this could be with anything that you are describing yourself as, I am just not a very patient person. I am just not a very social person. These are all what the client might believe as a fact. And it might seem to you when you're describing yourself as an objective observation, like you're just reporting the news, you're just reporting what is true. This is the truth. I'm not a very organized person. But this is a thought, my friends. These are actually your thoughts about yourself. And while it might seem like a technicality, this is an important distinction because a thought is not a fact. A fact is a fact, and a thought is a thought. And when we understand the difference between thoughts and facts, we're able to see where our own choices are. When we have the power to choose, we take back our authority and our power over situations we may find ourselves in. Especially when it comes to medical motherhood, one of the most painful parts, I feel like, is that all of a sudden you feel like you're stripped from choices. You went in life thinking that you had all these choices, even though you really didn't have a lot of choices. A lot of things are decided for us. But when we're in medical motherhood, we feel like so much of our plans got taken away. So many of our goals and dreams and hopes and all these things got taken away from us. Again, these are thoughts, But this is how I would have described my journey in the early days of diagnosis, that I didn't have a choice, that I was being robbed of my future, and I had all these things taken from me. And our brains don't like being acted upon. We don't like not having control or autonomy over ourselves. And so this causes a lot of frustration, anger, resentment, and just overall feeling like we're out of control because we don't feel like we have control anymore. And we don't like that. We don't like not having a choice in the matter. And that's why I just love the work of coaching, because medical moms deserve to know how much power they have in these situations. It's such an important tool to have in your back pocket because of the things that you're facing that you don't have control over. And so when you're able to see that this is a fact and you don't have control over it, but this is a thought and you do have control over it, this gives you more freedom and more access to your ability to make decisions and not feel like you are being acted upon. And again, some of this might sound like a technicality or just like semantics, but this is really where managing your brain comes in. So you might have a thought, I am just not a very organized person, but you think it's a fact. And the way you show up in your life, thinking that this is a fact, impacts your life. That you just think, oh, this is set in stone. This is something I can't change. When in fact, it can be changed when you are aware that it isn't a fact. And my job as a life coach is to show you how those thoughts, when they go unexamined, sometimes my brain works faster than my mouth. when your thoughts go unexamined and unmanaged, they're going to impact your life in a way that you may not like, that you may not notice that you even have control over. And as you learn how to recognize your thoughts and separate them from yourself as like who you are, because your thoughts are not who you are. And then as you learn how to manage your feelings and process those, and then connect them to how you react or respond to things, you will see what kind of results come up in your life. And that's where the power comes in. That's where your authority comes in, because then you get to decide. You get to be the decision maker and the manager of how you want to proceed with this information. And sometimes it's, oh, I think that I am a disorganized person, but I was basing that off of the other thought that being organized is the most valuable thing I can do, or that organized people are better than disorganized people, or that maybe you grew up in a household that was very messy and then you feel like you were supposed to change this, but then you didn't. So now you feel like you're failing your kids, right? It's so fascinating to see how one thought actually means so much more underneath once we start exploring it. Maybe you think, okay, I no longer want to attach my worth to being disorganized, but I also do want to feel a little bit more organized, but I've always seen myself as a disorganized person. So how do I connect the bridge of, hey, this messy drawer does not reflect my value, and how can I keep it organized, right? These are the fun things that we get to problem solve in a coaching session. And it's sounds like we're only focusing on a organized drawer, but reality is we're focusing on so much more, because the example is I'm not an organized person, and you're being able to see what you're attaching your value to, what you're making it mean about yourself as a wife or a partner, as a parent, as a person. And or you could have the opposite experience, right? Maybe your parent was very, very organized and very clean and had just like a very, very organized household, and then you became a parent and you were like, wow, they put in so much work. Were any of you guys shocked at the amount of cleaning you had to do as a parent? Like the amount of messes that kids make. I'm like, are you kidding? This was a shocking part of parenting. So all of that to say, I'm going to keep going along with this example because I shared this, and this is an actual a thought that I've had about myself that I'm personally trying to notice and not identify with, because I, through a lot of coaching from coaches and through self-coaching, I've recognized that, one, I've neutralized this thought. This thought of I'm not a very organized person for me meant that I was failing in some way. Like I wasn't as good as I could be. And if I was more organized, I would be a better person. But that's not how self-worth works. Your worthiness doesn't change. It doesn't matter how messy you are or how disorganized you are or how much you procrastinate or how much you do whatever negative quote-unquote attribute you might be observing in yourself. And I say this because when a client comes to me, that's usually what they start with. They're like, well, I'm just not very good at managing my time or my finances. I'm not very good at doing things on a schedule because I'm just a big procrastinator. The very first step is to neutralize this, because we have beliefs attached to this. Like, you're not very organized and what? Why does this matter? So that's really the first step. We get into the nitty-gritty of what you're making it mean about yourself and why you want to change. Because if you want to change to increase your worth, the decision to change is coming from a self-loathing perspective of like, I'm not good enough and I want to find my worth outside of myself. So I've done that work. I've worked on the self-worth of not associating my disorganization with my value. And it took some time because for a long time, my brain wanted to be like, look how messy you are. But that work I've done, and sometimes I do still have to remind myself, but it's not as frequent because I've changed that thought pattern in my brain. I've developed the habit of not associating myself with less value because I see a messy drawer or a messy closet. So after we've established that your worth isn't changing because you procrastinate or because you don't manage your time, quote unquote, well, I, in a session, am going to ask you some questions about the specific thought you're having. So here is a look into my own self-coaching. I usually think the thought I'm just not a very organized person when I'm cleaning. So if I'm cleaning up my living room and I'm starting to put things away and I notice that I'm putting, you know, we have a drawer for all my girls' hair stuff and I'm putting the hair ties or headbands into the drawer and the drawer is messy, I will have the thought, man, I'm just not a very organized person because of the messy drawer. And then I would ask myself, when I think that thought in that moment, what do I feel? What's the emotion that occurs when I think that thought? I'm just not a very organized person. My feeling, and this could be different for every one of you if you have a similar thought, maybe it's procrastination, just plug in whatever thought you're having. My feeling when I think that thought, and sometimes you have to like sit into your body and go back to that moment or think about the last time you experienced this thought of like, I'm just not a very organized person or a time management person or I'm just a procrastinator, another self-identity one. Think back to when you had that thought last and remember what it felt like to think that thought and what one word emotion did you have when you thought that thought. I feel frustrated when I think that thought. I get very frustrated. And then we want to know what you do when you're feeling that emotion, whatever came up for you. When I am cleaning and I think that thought, then I feel frustrated. And when I'm frustrated, I just start putting things wherever. Like I stop using my brain and I kind of just respond to that emotional part of my brain, not the logic part, but the emotion part of my brain. And I am responding to the emotion because I'm seeing myself in a negative light, right? And I just put things wherever. And then I also talk down to myself, right? We're really trying to observe in that moment. Like, what did I do the last time I opened that drawer, saw that it was messy? I thought, I'm just not a very organized person. And I felt frustrated. And when I feel frustrated, I just started putting things wherever. I started talking down to myself, telling myself negative things about not being organized. And I looked at other areas of my house as I was cleaning, like looking around, seeing evidence that I am not that I am not an organized person, like seeing more failures. And I would say things like, see, you're just not organized, and that's why you're so frustrated. If you could get your crap together, you wouldn't feel this way, which is not how your brain works, but this is what my brain says. So it's like, we want to know what we do when we feel this way. And we also want to know what we don't do when we feel this way. What are we avoiding? What are we not doing during this time? I don't try to find the most correct spot for things. I just start putting things in random drawers. I'm like, whatever, it doesn't matter because I'm not organized, right? I don't look for solutions long term. I look for short term things. Like, I'll go out and buy baskets. I'm just like buying baskets, 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 baskets. That's usually my go-to solution. I'm like, okay, let's just buy more baskets. But I don't implement a system. I'm not implementing an actual organizational system. So I'm not actually solving the problem. I'm just kind of short-term getting a basket, and maybe it helps for a short time, or maybe it just stays in my room and it's a cute basket, right? I'm also not redirecting my thoughts. I'm not noticing that these are thoughts and not facts. I'm also not processing the emotion. I reacted to the emotion. I didn't pause and allow myself to just feel frustrated. I just immediately reacted to it and just started being like, okay, fine, whatever. We're just disorganized. I'm also noticing all the reasons why I'm disorganized. I'm focused on the evidence of my disorganization. I'm only seeing that evidence. I'm not seeing the ways I am organized because I am in lots of ways organized. And this is what your brain will do, is that if I go around my house, probably 50% is organized, but I don't see that part, right? Like, I have a drawer for towels. I have a drawer for hand towels. I have a cupboard for kitchen utensils. I have a cupboard for cleaning supplies. I have places where I know things are, which by all means can be organized. And yet my brain doesn't focus on the half of our house that is organized, that does work well. I'm only focusing on the disorganization. And as a result, I guarantee that that part of my house will stay disorganized. And I also continue seeing myself as a person who isn't capable of being organized. I'm reinforcing the identity that I don't even want. And this will go for the same for you. If you are a procrastinator, right? If you're like, I'm just a procrastinator, man. I guarantee there's lots of things you don't procrastinate. I guarantee you're not 100% a procrastinator. And that's what's so fascinating about identity work, like who we think we are, because we're like, oh, I'm just this. I'm just really bad at time management. I guarantee that that's not 100% of the time true, right? There's so many ways where we just block out the other evidence, because you could gather evidence for the opposite if you tried. And that's a technique I often use. I will pause when I'm managing my brain and be like, I wonder how I am organized. Oh, I have a meal plan. I know what I'm going to make for dinner. I have a schedule. I know when I'm working out today. Like, that's organization. My house might not be organized. My brain is, right? This is such a great exercise. This is what I do with my clients. And this is something you can do on your own. And this is what managing your brain looks like. It's noticing those patterns. It's recognizing your thoughts, seeing the connection between your thoughts, feelings, and behavior, and seeing what it creates for you as a result. Like, what are you reinforcing as a response to those things? And in managing your brain, it helps you notice what the facts are, and we get really, really specific about those facts. Like when I open the drawer, what are the facts about the drawer? When I look at my schedule, what are the facts about my schedule? This helps you see evidence for both sides. It helps you see that you're not just 100% anything. You have some habits in some ways and some habits in the other. And it will help you managing your brain disrupt the patterns that you feel like aren't serving you. And for me, I just don't feel like this thought serves me the best because it reinforces a negative belief that I am not capable of it. And when I realized that this was the core belief behind it, that I'm just not one of those people, I just can't be organized, I have worked on allowing myself to be a little messy. Like, messiness is not the end all and be all. I'm going to let my desk get a little messy. I'm going to let my room get a little messy, and I can clean it. And that is separate from me creating organization, right? I kept seeing that if I had a messy desk, that meant I wasn't organized ever. But that's not true. And so by learning to manage your brain, you start breaking down more and more of how you can, one, accept yourself more, which is like the first step to loving yourself more. And so then you are loving yourself through a change rather than loathing yourself through a change. And do you see how much different this will feel? Because in the beginning, when you're like, oh, I have to become more organized so that I am a better person, so that I'm not less than other people, versus, oh, I love myself and I'm allowed to have messiness and humanness and make mistakes and not fall into that perfectionist ideal version of made-upness. That's a whole sling of words that doesn't quite make sense, but you all understand me, I'm sure. Like, we fall into this trap of, oh, I'm just going to be this perfect person and have everything in the perfect way. And you're identifying this perfectionist dream with whatever you don't have. Like, oh, you're only seeing your inadequacies. And those inadequacies might not even actually be inadequacies. Most likely they are not. And instead of coming from, I want to change because I'm not good enough, we ask ourselves, okay, if I just loved this part of myself, would this even be a problem? Half of my drama around organization, like 50% literally just disappeared. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, it's not a problem. I don't need a perfectly organized pantry 24/7. Like, I would, every time I'd open a cupboard or open a drawer and I saw messiness, I just thought, oh, this is just another reason why I'm failing at organizing my house. My kids are going to be traumatized and blah, blah, blah. Like, this whole story of like me not being a great mom or whatever would come into play. And I'm like, no, 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 no. The messiness in the pantry or in my spice cupboard or whatever it is that I'm looking at the time is not indicating anything about my worth. And a little bit of messiness is totally tolerable. And we're going to also work on routines and systems, right? So it's a both. And I'm much more motivated and open to change because I'm not focusing on the negative. I'm focusing on a positive way to reinforce what I want. So the reason why we get into these patterns is that your brain is wired to do three things. One, it wants to avoid pain, both emotional and physical. This is like our caveman days. We're going to avoid all kinds of pain. We're keeping ourselves safe. And your brain processes physical and emotional pain very similarly. And so it sees emotional pain the same way as physical pain. It's like, no, we want to avoid feeling sad or frustrated. And that's why we're just going to chuck things in random drawers and not care, because we want to avoid the pain of feeling frustrated. And the second thing we do is seek pleasure. So it's not fun to use our logical brain. We want to think about all the things that are fun. We don't want to think about problem solving. We want to be fun and feel good specifically. We want the dopamine. We want the serotonin. We want all the ways that our brain will feel good. And that varies for lots of different people. So maybe in the past, I've just stopped cleaning, right? Who has started an organizational project and you're like halfway through and it's just like overwhelming? You're like, yep, I'm done. And you just walk away because you're like, can't handle this. It's not pleasurable anymore. Your brain is like, let's just go watch Netflix. Let's go scroll TikTok. This is not pleasurable. And the last thing your brain wants to do is save energy. Your brain is always measuring these things, avoiding pain, seeking pleasure, save energy. This is going to be that default part of your brain that's just like, we are going to keep ourselves as safe and comfortable and happy as possible, even if it's not short or a long-term solution. It saves energy by reusing thought patterns. So if you've had a thought pattern about yourself, like I've had, like a negative thought pattern, it's going to choose to reinforce this, even if it's like not a solution long term, because it saves energy. Your brain has so much to do all day long. It processes so much information, controls your body, right? It's regulating so many things. So it's going to create these like neuropathways in your brain that's going to be easy to use. And if you've had this pattern for a decade, it's going to feel like a lot of work to change your thought pattern. And so your brain's going to be like, hold up. Telling yourself that it's okay to be messy and to like disrupt your pattern of thought is way too much energy. That does not sound fun. And I would much rather just not do any of that and just keep feeling frustrated and avoid all that work. So it doesn't want to do these things. That's what happens when you first start doing it. Your body's like, I'm going to resist all of this. This sounds like so much effort. And at first it kind of is a lot of effort. It is work to pause and think and plan ahead and do all this work. And if you even associate cleaning with pain, right? Like, maybe you just don't love cleaning, or if it's just very unpleasurable for you, or you had to do a lot of cleaning as a kid, whatever your associations are with cleaning, your brain will be even more motivated to avoid those things because it already has that association / pattern or habit. It doesn't want to feel bad. Your brain seeks the short-term satisfaction in the name of self-preservation over a long-term solution. So, being the manager of your brain is where you use your logical brain, the planning part of your brain. You access the planning part of your brain, which is the prefrontal cortex, where your executive function occurs. This is where you think about your thoughts. You think about your emotions. You regulate your emotions. And you're a manager or a responder to your emotional brain, your limbic system, your limbic brain. Your prefrontal cortex is like the logical brain part of your brain, logic brain, emotional brain. Okay. The limbic part of your brain is where your flight, freeze, fawn response occurs. When you're in danger, when your nervous system is very dysregulated, it's going to be constantly saying, am I safe? Am I safe? And if it detects non-safety, it's going to be like, hold up, we're not doing that. This is where your habits are, your impulses, your reactions. And it wants that short-term satisfaction. And if we're not actively thinking, if we're not actively using our prefrontal cortex, the limbic system is in control. And this is not a bad thing. We want this to happen. We don't want to be thinking constantly all day about every single decision we'd have to make. It's a good thing that your brain can just, oh, we're going to have the habit of doing this. And we create that habit and we log it into the system so that we're not having to think about every decision we make in our brain. That'd be exhausting and unnecessary. So again, your brain is incredible. It's a really amazing organ. And most of the time, I would say 75% of the time, your brain is doing its job. It's day to day, getting things done, making decisions, performing in a way that serves you. It's the other like 25%-ish time where we want to examine and manage it, right? To make sure that we are observing the habits we have, take inventory of how we're feeling and managing our stress and emotions, and to see what impact it has on our life and what we want, right, in our lives. And here are the ways managing your brain, being aware of your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors can really help you. And these are my, like, basically the ways I've seen it change in my life. We've already talked about this a bit, but the first one, I think, where I've had the most impact on my life, and I can see where my clients have literally had, like, where your the brain is just like mind blown, is in your identity. There are all sorts of ways our identity is formed, who we think we are at our core, and how it gets defined, right? It's impacted by our family unit, our cultures, our religions, where we lived, where we grew up, our experiences at school, our friends, teachers, anything in our sphere of influence has impacted how we see ourselves and who we are. And for a long time of our lives, we don't actually question it. We just absorb that and we're told who we are as kids. We're told what we're good at. We are told in what we're bad at. We're told that we might be procrastinator. We might be told we're lazy. We might be told we're messy. We might be told these things that then become who we are. Oh, we're just messy. We're just lazy. We're just this. We might be told about, like, our personality types, like, we're just shy. We're just not good at this. I don't know where I picked it up, but I really thought about how I was just, like, not a good athlete. Like, I was not athletic. I was a non-athlete. And so physical activities growing up were really hard for me because I always had in my mind that this wasn't for me. Like, PE classes were hard because I was like, this just isn't for me. I'm not one of the people that are good at physical activities. And this really, like, I look back and I really wish I had been able to catch this thought earlier on. Now I am 30 and I really enjoy exercising. And I just felt like that because exercise was hard, that it meant it wasn't for me. And at some point I was probably told that I'm not, like, the most coordinated or something. And then I took that and ran with it. But it really is something that I was like, I've absorbed in childhood and kept on. And now I'm finally breaking those barriers down over the, like, the last 4 years. And I'm, like, seeing my identity shift and who I am and what I'm capable of. And it feels so powerful. Like, it's the most empowering thing I've done is completely shift my thoughts about my body and what I'm capable of physically. And for the first time in my life, I feel strong and capable of doing physical activity. And it's just the craziest thing, but it really started with me seeing that as not a fact. Who you think you are is not set in stone. And I know this because all of the medical moms I know, one day we are not a heart mom. We are not a tubby mom. We're not an autism mom. And the next day we are, right? Like, maybe you had an indication of a diagnosis or whatever, but it's, we get a health condition and all of a sudden our identity changes and who we see ourselves as changes. All of a sudden you're an advocate, right? I didn't identify myself as an advocate before Zola. And then it didn't happen overnight for the advocacy part, but after a while I was like, oh, I'm an advocate. Like, this is me advocating for my daughter and her well-being. I'm a caregiver. On top of being a mother, I have a different, slightly different role for Zola in my mind. There are all these different ways I've now identified with. And it's the same for any other thing. Like, you don't have to, if you're able to identify with a new thing, it means you're also able to unidentify with an old thing, like procrastinator or a non-exerciser or someone who can't do this, right? I'm not the kind of person who can lose weight. I'm not the type of person who could run a business. I'm not the type of person who can organize my entire house, right? Like, these are the things that go unexamined. And yet, when we question them, when we see, why am I putting limits on myself? What if it is possible that my identity is not set in stone and I'm actually capable of doing what I want if I want it, if this is something I actually desire? Number two, when you're managing your brain, the biggest thing for medical moms is helping yourself manage your brain for doctor's appointments. The amount of doctor's appointments that you have as a medical mom obviously varies amongst different children, but it suddenly just goes from like regular checkups from a typical child to like you're seeing so many different people. You're seeing specialists, you're seeing physical therapy, occupational therapy, you're just seeing all kinds of people in all different ways. And this can be a lot. And managing your brain about your capability of handling it, your relationship with those doctors, who you are at the doctor's appointment, your confidence in yourself during those doctor's appointments, your stress levels during those appointments, scheduling like a surgery. It's always those like, this is the appointment where we're about to schedule this next open heart surgery. How do I prepare for this? Preparing for a doctor's appointment starts well before that appointment. Not that you can't prepare like the day before. Prepare as soon as you can. But I've had clients come to me and say, hey, my kid is having heart surgery in 3 months and I want to be prepared. And we spend time practicing that preparation through the doctor's appointments, right? We put in these skills of managing your brain, identifying your thoughts about the doctor's appointment, your feelings, how you want to show up. It can also show up in a different child. I had a client who really wanted to prepare for their anatomy scan after they had already had a heart baby. And so they were like, I just want to prepare for this. And so we worked on managing their mind around how they wanted to communicate to the staff, how they wanted to feel, what they wanted to believe about themselves and their pregnancy. And it really helped them have the experience that served them. Had they not gone through that, it could have been a much different experience for them. And so managing your brain really comes into this empowered sense of medical motherhood, where again, we're thrust into a world where we don't have a lot of control over the outcomes. We don't have a lot of control about what happens and who we see and all the things that we're going to experience. And yet we can prepare our brains and our emotions and increase our tolerance for discomfort through managing your brain. It's a priceless tool. It's so invaluable. This is literally what I wish I had, just this preparing for doctor's appointments, because I was always like buzzing with so much stress, or then as soon as the doctor's appointment would end, I would be like numb. I would just be like, oh my gosh, my body would just like shut down. And learning to prepare for doctor's appointments through brain management is like the best thing that I've done as a medical mom. The next area of managing your brain, which is super powerful, is in your relationships. Relationships bring up everything. And also, relationships are so valuable to our health, literally our physical health and our mental health. There was a study done that showed that our relationships and how happy we are with our relationships had a huge influence on our physical health. It was through Harvard. You can Google it. But essentially, it was like this very long study to see like how we age and what impacts our aging. And more than money or fame or like job satisfaction was relationships. And this was really surprising for researchers because it was the close relationships in their lives that had a tie to like physical decline and mental health and all of these things. And it predicted the people who were in the study and followed over their lifetime had longer and happier lives outside of like their social class, IQ, or even genes. And so this is really telling in terms of how valuable our relationships are. And part of being in a relationship is being able to self-examine, see how you show up in a relationship, and be really honest with yourself. Because relationships take honesty, and that starts with honesty with yourself. Like seeing how you show up, being able to communicate And all of this takes vulnerability. And being vulnerable is how we create connection with other people. And this feels unsafe to our brain. So we want to naturally protect ourselves. We want to avoid apologizing. We don't want to admit our mistakes. We want to not feel uncomfortable when we have to listen to someone complain or have just a difficult conversation with your spouse, right? Or even just communicate things to our friends. Being able to express gratitude sometimes can be hard for us. Having difficult conversations around boundaries and clearly communicating things that you want or don't want in your life. It comes to like sometimes a shock when you get a diagnosis or your child has a health condition and all of a sudden a relationship you felt was solid changes, or friends that you thought were going to be part of your support system are no longer there for you, or a relationship with a family member changes drastically because of the boundaries you have to have around your medical child. It's, or maybe even like your mom isn't reacting the way you thought they would react. Like there's all kinds of really surprising ways our relationships can change when our medical kid is born or has these medical conditions, because they're all also reacting to their own discomfort and their own emotional worlds inside their brain. And so it's hard sometimes not to take it personally. And that's often what I see in my coaching practice, is we work on taking things personally. Like, is this something, because something that I should be offended about? And why does this hurt so bad that they did this? I don't even care. Or managing your expectations within a relationship and having your spouse be someone that you all of a sudden really can't talk to fully about your child's condition because they process their feelings different. Maybe they aren't as emotional, or maybe they're not as afraid. And then when you express your fear, you feel like you're stressing them out, or they're not as receptive because you're like, they aren't as bothered. They are just compartmentalizing, or they're just focused on one thing at a time. And I need to process all these things. I always tell my clients, the best part of having me as a coach is I understand what it's like to be a medical mom, but you never have to make me feel better. You can just share all of your feelings and process your feelings about your child's diagnosis without having to worry if you're stressing me out about your child's diagnosis or upcoming surgery or something, because I am not there for that. Relationships change, not just in medical motherhood, but throughout life. And to create and cultivate high quality relationships, you must manage your brain. It just has to happen. Noticing little things, making sure that you are looking for evidence in not always in a negative way. Like there's just so many ways our brain wants to always make things about us. And often it's never about us. Like, or managing your expectations of people, asking for help, not caring about what other people think of you. All of these things happen in our relationships. And it's unfortunate that we're not taught this really in school, or hardly even in college. And these are the things we have to learn on our own. But that's what's so incredible, is that it's such a valuable resource for us to have the ability to manage our brain. Like once we start investing in that part of ourselves, we are just given so much back in all these areas of our brain. The next category that I think is a really, really important place is your child's diagnosis or health condition. Not everyone has a concrete diagnosis. I know there are many out there that are not diagnosed, have mystery illnesses, or have a combination of a lot. So it could be a health condition, a multitude of health conditions, or a specific diagnosis. But you have a relationship with your child's diagnosis, and how you think about their health condition, what you believe about what it makes it mean about you, about your future, the amount of happiness you can experience, all of that is going to impact how you feel and think on a daily basis and what you think you, what is possible for you. And the relationship you have with your child's diagnosis is also important because it's reflected to your child. And because we don't know what it's like to grow up, well, some of us, maybe a few of you out there do, grow up with an illness, oftentimes our child is going to take cue from us to tell them what to think about themselves, just like we did from our caregivers growing up. We think to our mom and dad, like, what do I think about myself? And we're taking the cue from them, and our kids are going to do the same thing. And so this is a really important thing to consider about how do we want to think about their diagnosis? How do we want to talk to them about it? How do we want to, what do we want to believe about it? What do we want to accept about this journey? Diagnosis piece is what I call it, but it is a category pillar of my coaching practice about really exploring the grief and the acceptance and the level of discomfort and tolerance we have to this paradox of wanting our kid to be healthy, but also accepting that they're not, and holding space for both the fear and the joy that they bring into our life through this diagnosis. And this is an area that is often never done. It's continuously, you're going to grieve and process it and re-grieve and reprocess different aspects as they grow, as new milestones occur, as they get older and get more questions about it. Zola asks so many questions randomly all the time. And I'm just amazed at how her brain thinks and what kind of questions she comes up with. And as she gets older and when she goes through puberty, things will happen and we'll have different conversations then. And so there's going to be lots of times in your life where managing your brain is going to be so valuable when it comes to how you discuss it with them. Because the first step is already having done the work for yourself. Because going into the conversation when you're unsure or haven't really like processed any of it yourself, maybe you're going to avoid the conversation. Maybe you're going to become very fearful or maybe you're just not going to show up in a way that you want to. And when you can have some resemblance of calmness, even if you're emotional, right? It is okay to have our kids see us cry or feel emotional. But I think being able to be relatively calm and understand that they're taking a message from us is important in terms of our parenting a medical child. And lastly, I think one of the main things that comes from managing your brain is your goals. And maybe you're not thinking of your goals. Maybe you're not like a super goal-oriented person, but you could call it your priorities or your focus or your results that you want in your life. And this is a really important thing because it's a really easy way to check about if something is actually a priority, if something is actually something we want. Because a lot of times we say we want something like, oh, I want to do this. I want to start a business. Oh, I want to lose weight, or I want to save money, or I want to clean my house, or I say decorate a lot. I want to decorate my house, but do I actually? Because here's the check. The best way to know is to take like what you say you want, pick five things, and then over the last 2 weeks, see how you spent your time. And just think like, oh, day to day, am I actually doing any of the things that I've focused on? Like, okay, strengthen my relationship with my husband, save money, read 4 books, exercise 4 days a week, work on my website. And how am I actually doing when I check my time? And how did I spend my time, right? And we're not doing this in a judgmental way. We're doing it in a curious way. We're doing it in a compassionate way. We're just like, is what I'm saying actually what I want to do? Or do I just think I have to want this? And why do I say this if I don't actually want it? And what do I actually want? And how am I spending my time? And some of the ways you're going to be like, yeah, I'm spending my time how I want to. And in other ways, I'm probably not dedicating to the time that I actually want to. This will help you figure out how to reprioritize. This little check-in helps you, like, oh yeah, why am I spending so much time looking at other people's lives on TikTok and not actually doing it for myself? And it's also great to just be like, okay, I'm just going to stop telling myself that I want to hang those pictures until I can actually schedule it so that I can say that I want to do it and I'm actually doing it. So I can just take that pressure off myself to stop telling myself, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to do that. Let's just take all of that away and focus on what I actually want over the next month. What I actually want to do is rest a lot. And I don't want to do a lot of things around the house. And I don't want to do a lot of extra projects. I just want to read on my evenings or on my weekends. And that's completely valid, right? You don't have to have all these like super ambitious goals to have your priorities aligned. You just want to check in with yourself to make sure that what you want is actually what you're spending your time with so that you can create a life that you love. And that is my ultimate goal for all my clients and all of you through this podcast and the resources I create, is that so many of us, when we become medical moms, feel like our life is just a little bit less than what it could be. And I want to tell you that you're wrong in the most loving way, is that your life is still and will be incredible. It can be very fulfilling and nothing is being taken away from you. Your happiness limit is not being lowered. You have that available to you at any time. And managing your brain is how you get that stuff done. It's how you learn how to regulate yourself and how you settle into yourself during that stressful time. It's how you're able to create a life that you're very fulfilled by and empowered through. This process of managing your brain creates self-trust, which is one of the most important things that you can create in your life. Self-trust leads to safety, emotional safety, which leads to being more willing to be vulnerable. And vulnerability is how you create that connection with yourself, with others, and in your life. This is also how you're going to build confidence. This is why coaching is so freaking valuable. Managing your brain is the skill that keeps on giving. These kinds of tools never expire. It never just goes away. I love working with my clients and seeing how they create a life they love, how they recognize the authority within themselves, and how they learn to love themselves deeper through it all. And if you're ready to step into that empowered place and start building that version of you, I would love to work with you. So sign up for a coaching consultation at the link in my bio or the show notes. Link in bio on Instagram or the show notes below. All right, my friends. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode, and I will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye. The episode is over, but there's so much more you can get from our Facebook group. Come to the Mindset for Medical Moms Facebook group community at the link in the show notes and discuss all the things about the podcast. Also, you can get coached for free. Come and ask me questions and connect with fellow medical moms. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much.